This is podcast number 105 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'm talking about Rembrandt. I'm going to leave Spain for a bit, but I'll come back before the month is over just to touch upon what happened when that lust for gold took over and her relentless search for El Dorado led to an age of piracy. So let's turn to brave little Holland. You may want to listen to podcast number 26 if you haven't yet. There are a lot of parallels between her story and the story of America as she fought to be free and to be independent from her Spanish oppressors, which is why the study of Holland is linked to the study of Spain. And her story is linked to the study of the Pilgrims because they fled to Holland before they came to America. There were few places that would tolerate the freedom to worship according to the dictates of one's own conscience, and Holland was such a place of refuge. Today's sampler is from a book called Stories of Great Artists by Olive Horn Brown. You'll find the selection in Stories of Paintings in the Forgotten Classics series. It first creates a simple scene of life in Holland in the time of Rembrandt, who was a young boy when the Pilgrims were living in Leiden. And then it unfolds the life of Rembrandt, told in a way that an elementary-age child can understand. Rembrandt's Native Land. Come with me far across the sea to Holland and visit our good Dutch friends. Holland is a very small country. We shall see no mountains here, for the country is very low. Now, you must know that lowland is often wetland. Indeed, the word Holland means wetland. We shall find that this is a good name. We can hardly believe it when we learn that Holland is lower than the ocean. Why, then, we say at once, does not the sea overflow the land? If that were true, the houses would be destroyed, the gardens and fields would be flooded, and the cattle would be drowned. It is true that all these things would happen if the people did not have the dikes. Without them, they could not live in Holland at all. These dikes are great walls of stone and earth. They are built along the beach. They keep back the sea. They are very high and are so wide that carts can be driven on their tops. In some places, houses have been built on the dikes. How carefully the Dutch people watch for a leak in the dike. If one of these great banks should give way, many lives would be lost. In Holland, there are canals running in every direction. In some towns, there are no streets at all. Canals are used instead. Many bridges span these canals. Winter is the happiest season of the year for the Dutch children. Then all the canals are frozen. Every man, woman, and child has a pair of skates. What a crowd of happy people! Children race to school on their skates. The women skate to market. On their heads they carry baskets filled with cheeses and rolls of butter. Almost anywhere in Holland one may see windmills. They are used for grinding corn, sawing wood, and pumping water. The wind fills the sails of the windmills. The great arms whirl swiftly around. The machinery is set in motion. When the wind does not blow, no work can be done. Let us visit one of the homes in this interesting country. How clean and orderly everything is. The copper pots and brass kettles hang above the broad fireplace. The dancing flames make them shine like polished gold. There are no carpets on most of the floors. They've been sprinkled with clean, white sand instead. The furniture is waxed and polished. The chairs all stand back against the walls in straight rows. We are shown into the parlor because we are visitors. The children are not allowed to enter this room except on Sundays and holidays. We must step very carefully, for patterns in the sand have been traced on the floor. We see good engravings hanging on the walls. In richer homes, we should find oil paintings. Now we must say goodbye to the kind Dutch dame and her tidy house. As we pass through the yard, we see the children scrubbing their wooden shoes with sand. When they are as white as snow, they will place them in a row outside the door. The outside of the house is almost as spotless as the inside. Would it not seem strange to see someone washing the outside of a house? That is just what they do in Holland. Even that is not enough. They give the houses a fresh coat of paint each year. Every home has a garden near it. The narrow paths are covered with fine white gravel. They are as neat as everything else about a Dutch home. Here and there are bright beds of blossoming flowers. How beautiful the red and yellow tulips are in the bright sunshine. We are told that we may pick some of the gay blossoms. We are glad, then, that we came to Holland in the spring. Nearly all of the houses are built on the banks of the canals. As we look down the canals, we see that the houses stand in straight rows. The trees have been planted in straight lines. Every house has a windmill. Even the windmills have been built in rows. The trees and windmills look like two rows of soldiers on each side of the canal. One of the largest cities in Holland is Amsterdam. Much business is carried on there. Years ago, it was even a busier place than it is now. Merchants from all over the world came to trade in Amsterdam. The people did well in their business. They had all the money they needed. Their homes were pleasant and happy. They liked to hang fine pictures on their walls. They also bought large oil paintings for halls and public buildings. For these reasons, many artists came to live in Amsterdam. They found it easy to sell their work there. One of the smaller Dutch cities is called Leiden. It stands on the banks of the River Rhine. There are scores of bridges in this city. They are built across the canals and across the river also. The bridges reach from one island to another, for Leiden is built upon islands. This place is well known for its university. Many, many years ago, an army tried to capture Leiden. The Dutch people fought bravely. They were willing to give up anything to save their country. For many days they did not have enough to eat. At last the cruel war was over. The enemy had sailed away. The prince of the country was called William of Orange. He wished to reward the brave people of Leiden. He said they might choose between a large gift of gold and a university. The people needed money to rebuild their homes, yet they chose the university. Was not that a wise thing to do? Boyhood of Rembrandt. About 300 years ago, a child called Rembrandt van Rijn was born in Leiden. His father was a miller. His mill stood on the banks of the River Rhine. Van Rijn means of the Rhine. So the child was called Rembrandt van Rijn to show where his home was. In Holland, one can often tell from his name where a person lives. Rembrandt's father was well-to-do. His mother was a good woman. She spent all of her time caring for her home and her children. Rembrandt had four brothers and sisters. They had a comfortable home near the mill. The children spent much of their time there. They liked to play in the dim, dusty old place. They liked to watch the sails of the windmill turn swiftly about. They tried to help the dust-covered miller pile up the great sacks of grain. The child Rembrandt was sent to school, as all other Dutch children were. He was a bright little fellow. He was so good-natured that all his playmates liked him. By and by he grew to be a tall, strong youth. His parents asked him what trade he would like to follow. Rembrandt did not know which one to choose. He was sure, however, that he did not wish to be a miller. His parents hoped he would be a priest or a lawyer. Do you remember that Prince William gave the people of Leiden a university? The lad was sent to this university at Leiden. It was surrounded by a park. Rembrandt spent much of his time there. Curious plants from many parts of the world grew in the hothouses. He was greatly interested in these odd plants. Every Sunday he took a long walk into the country. He saw green meadows dotted with grazing cattle. There were fields shaded by great trees. He liked to watch the crimson and gold of the sunset light in the canals. Best of all, he liked the beautiful Rhine. All day ships were passing to and fro on the river. Rembrandt often sat for hours watching the procession of white and colored sails. It is a great holiday. Years ago on this same day, the enemy had been driven from the city. Banners of all colors are flying from the housetops. Hark! Tramp, tramp, tramp come the soldiers down the street. In what straight lines they march. How well they keep step with the music. Rembrandt pushes his way to the very front of the crowd. He watches the glittering arms of the soldiers. How the sunlight gleams on their lances. The younger soldiers are in the front ranks. See, the old soldiers are marching forward. The people cheer and cheer. The men and boys wave their hats in the air. The girls throw flowers in the paths of soldiers. Why do they greet the old soldiers in this way? Rembrandt never forgot the sights he saw in those days. Rembrandt did not stay long at the university. He decided he did not wish to become a priest. He returned home. There were a number of artists in Leiden. Their pictures hung on the walls of the city hall. Rembrandt often visited that building. He looked at the engravings and the oil paintings. He liked the engravings better. He studied them for hours at a time. "What trade shall our son learn?" said Rembrandt's father to his wife one day. "He will not be a miller and does not care to be a priest." "The boy is very fond of fine pictures," said the mother. "Shall we not send him to an artist to study?" Soon after, Rembrandt was sent to an artist in Leiden. Can you not fancy how pleased the boy must have been? He stayed with this master 3 years. His teacher was very kind to him. He learned rapidly. Everyone who saw his work said he would someday be a great artist. At the end of the 3 years, his teacher could help him no more. He went back to his home. After a while, Rembrandt went to Amsterdam to study. He worked only 3 months with his second teacher. Once again, he went to Leiden to live. He had made up his mind that nature should be his only teacher. Rembrandt fitted up a studio in his father's mill. It had only one small window. The boy often watched the rays of the sun come through this window. The light fell on only one part of the room. The objects in that part could be clearly seen. The rest of the room was in a shadow. Rembrandt noticed this and tried to show it in his pictures. In this studio, Rembrandt painted a picture of his father in the mill. The mill is lighted by a lantern. The miller is piling up the great sacks in the storeroom. Most of the picture is in shadow. We can see the miller plainly because the light of the lantern falls upon him. Friends who saw the picture admired it very much. They told Rembrandt they thought he could sell it. So he took it to the city. A picture dealer gave him 100 florins for it. That's about $40 in our money. That was the first money that the boy had ever earned. He carried it proudly to his mother. Rembrandt kept at his work in his little studio in the mill. He painted a great many portraits. His family posed for him. He painted portraits of his sister, his cousins, and his father. The best work he did at this time was of his mother. As long as she lived, she posed for him. He never tired of painting his dear mother's face. In many of her pictures, she holds a Bible in her hands. In others, the Bible is close beside her. Rembrandt in Amsterdam. Rembrandt was a young man now. He wished to live among artists. There were more artists in Amsterdam than in any other city in Holland, so he decided to make his home there. Once again, he said goodbye to his friends and to the old home. He journeyed to Amsterdam by canal. He lived there until he died. People of this city had heard of Rembrandt's pictures. They were anxious to see the young artist. Some of the young men wished to become his pupils. He rented a large building for a studio. His pupils paid 100 florins a year as tuition. In many studios, all the light comes from above. There are no windows in the walls. Rembrandt had such a studio. Sometimes he wished to have a strong light on only one subject. Then he would darken all the windows but one. The light all fell in one place. Perhaps Rembrandt is painting the portrait of a fine lady. He asks her to stand in the light. How beautiful is the rich silk and lace of her dress! Bands of pearls and rubies are about her throat and arms. Every jewel is a bit of light. Rembrandt showed all this in his picture, the shadow and the bright light, the silk, the lace, and the jewels. When Rembrandt had been in Amsterdam only 2 years, his pictures were well known. He had more work than he could do. Many of the greatest people in the city wished him to paint their portraits. Priests, poets, rich merchants, and fashionable ladies came to him. He was very well paid. Rembrandt removed to a better studio. Merchants from all over the world brought beautiful things to Amsterdam. Now the artist could afford to buy some of these things. He bought heavy silks and richly colored velvets. He decorated his studio with them. He saw in the shops strange swords and daggers from other countries. He bought these and many other curious things for his studio. Sometimes Rembrandt painted things for a joke. Once he fitted a piece of canvas in the window of his room. Canvas is thick and shuts out the light. Yet Rembrandt painted this canvas to look like a pane of glass. He also painted a picture of his maid servant standing before this window as if she were about to open it. Rembrandt had much fun watching the people who came in. They did not realize that the window was covered with painted canvas. The work was so well done that they were sure that they saw a real window with a maid servant standing before it. They wondered why she stood there so long. Once an old gentleman spoke to her. She did not answer. He became impatient. He wished to see Rembrandt alone. He walked up to the girl. He meant to ask her to leave the room. He started to touch her shoulder when he found himself in front of a picture instead of a living person. How surprised he was! He turned to Rembrandt. The artist was shaking with laughter. It is said that Rembrandt made 50 pictures of himself. He would laugh as hard as he could. Then he would take up a mirror and look at himself laughing. He would try to paint just what he had seen in the hand glass. In this way, he learned to put a laughing face into a picture. Sometimes he looked sad or frowned. Again, he looked frightened. Each time, he studied his own face in the mirror. Afterwards, he painted or engraved what he had seen. After such study as this, no wonder he could paint portraits well. Often Rembrandt studied his own dress rather than his face. One day he put on a knight's armor. At another time he dressed himself as a nobleman in a rich velvet cloak. Taking a steel plate, he made an etching of himself in this dress. Rembrandt was called the Prince of Etchers. His etchings are almost as well known as his paintings. He engraved very rapidly. Once he was taking dinner with a friend. There was no mustard on the table. Hans, the servant, was sent for some. The artist said, "I'll wager I can engrave a picture before Hans returns." Rembrandt's friend replied, "I'll wager you cannot." Rembrandt never went away from home without a copper plate. He took one from his pocket and began his picture. He worked with quick, firm strokes. In a little while, Hans returned with the mustard. Just then, Rembrandt handed the finished plate to his friend. So the wager was won. Rembrandt did not always choose beautiful things to paint. He often had beggars to pose for him. In some of Rembrandt's engravings, we see these poor people. How ragged and uncared for they look. It became known in Amsterdam that the great artist was painting beggars. Many tramps gathered before his door every morning. Each one hoped Rembrandt would hire him to pose. The great artist worked nearly every hour of the day. He let nothing keep him from his work. No one was allowed to disturb him. He would not have stopped his painting even for the king. When Rembrandt was about 27 years old, he married. His wife was a lovely young woman. Her name was Saskia. They had a very happy home. Rembrandt took great delight in giving Saskia beautiful presents. He bought her necklaces of beautiful jewels. He gave her heavy gold bracelets. Indeed, he thought nothing was too fine for his young wife. Rembrandt did not care to paint his own picture now. Nothing gave him so much pleasure as to have his wife pose for him. In one picture, her head rests upon her hand. Beneath the broad straw hat she wears, her face is sweet and smiling. In another picture, she is a princess. Her long gown is of softest silk. The jewels about her neck and in her hair are most costly and beautiful. One of the loveliest pictures Rembrandt made of Saskia is called The Jewish Bride. Of all the artists in Amsterdam, the Dutch people liked Rembrandt the best. They were willing to pay large prices for his pictures. People from other cities also liked his work. The Night Watch is Rembrandt's finest picture. It was painted in 1642. It represents a company of soldiers in the street. They have been called out suddenly. In the center of the company is the captain. He is dressed in brown with a red sash about his waist. Near the captain stands another officer. His coat is yellow and his sash is white. He wears a plume in his big yellow hat. Some children have heard the drum. They wonder what is the matter. They slip in among the soldiers. The men themselves do not know what the trouble is. They have rushed out quickly and are not in line. Neither the flag bearer nor the drummer is in his place. Some soldiers have snatched up lances. One has a gun and another a sword. A great many men had asked Rembrandt to paint this picture. When it was finished, they would not pay for it. They did not like it. Each man wanted his own face to show most in the picture. Only two faces showed plainly. These two men were pleased. Those who were in the shadow were disappointed. The artist never received pay for his work. The night watch now hangs in a gallery in Amsterdam. Rembrandt was the father of several children. All except one died when they were very small. The son who lived was called Titus. His father painted several pictures of Titus while he was a baby. One shows the little fellow asleep. In another picture, the happy baby lies on a rug before a blazing fire. Rembrandt's happiest days were past. It made him sad that people did not like the night watch. He could not sell as many pictures as he had sold in former years. The death of his children filled his heart with sorrow. But a greater sorrow came to him. The gentle Saskia died. The beautiful home seemed lonely without Saskia. Rembrandt was too sad to paint any more. He had not paid for all the things in his home. The merchants wanted their money. Rembrandt's house was sold to pay his debts. All the furniture and pictures in the house were sold too. Even Saskia's jewels and beautiful gowns were taken by the merchants. In these days, Rembrandt read the Bible a great deal. Soon he began to paint again. His pictures all represented Bible stories. He was poor and unhappy, yet he worked as hard as ever. For many years, Rembrandt lived in Amsterdam, almost without friends. People came no more to have their portraits painted. Merchants no longer paid high prices for his engravings. A few years before his death, Rembrandt was given an order for a picture. This must have pleased the artist. The picture is called The Clothmakers. The people in Amsterdam liked it. Rembrandt was no longer sad. Of all the Dutch artists, Rembrandt is the greatest. The people in Holland still love him. They are proud of The Clothmakers and The Night Watch. Both of these pictures hang in Dutch galleries. Not only in Holland, but in many other countries is this artist admired.